see a continual flow of the forces of the darkness. We have permitted all too many to come in, and in violation of divine law, we have permitted those that have nothing in common with us coming into our society. Why are they referred to in the scriptures, the beast system? Because man without spirit is classified in the beast system, and man without the Spirit of God is in this system. This is the Enoch as against the Adamite, and thus this beast system lacks the spiritual guidance and influence to build the kingdom or to carry out a society like that of the Most High. Some of these races and peoples were good in the day they were created. They became the evil that they are under the fall, under the Luciferian pattern. But the purpose of God reaches from before the foundation of the world. It plans the transplanting of his sons and his daughters. It plans the creation of a new order in the earth. And thus it transplanted celestial children to a physical world. It brought them forth into being in the bodies of the Adamic race. It has ordained a mighty transition. And the difference is the difference between light and darkness. It is between spirit and the concept that lacks it. It's the imperfection of that which must operate on a physical plane without any areas of spiritual guidance. There is no area of completeness or of accuracy that comes really out of the pattern of the senses unless it has the guiding influence that rounds out its pattern from the areas of the spirit. This is the reason why a person may stand and behold a spectacle from any given point, and the natural eye is limited to only what it may see. And thus those from various vantage points, whether it be a vast game on a football field or whether it be an accident or event of history, the fact remains wherever they stand, they see this in a different perspective. It must be viewed from all around. But the natural eye is not omnipresent, but omniscience comes out of the spirit. And thus the guidance of the spirit evaluates what the eye perceives and the senses understand. And he who is of the household of the Most High has added to him the added perceptions and the vision and the initiative that comes out of the spirit. There is no secret thing that is hid from God's household. The way of the world order today is a way of darkness and subordination, and the idea is to hold and capture the minds of men, subordinate the patterns of the darkness, and create the catastrophe that affects the areas of our society. The thing that they're most afraid of is that there will be a quickening of divine responsibility, a return to divine standards, the cleansing of our society, and this they fight and this they seek to oppose. They would seek to instill in us the concept that we are antisocial, but we cannot carry out the responsibility of our society if we do not preserve the culture that God ordained from the days of our forefathers to this time to activate the consciousness and the pattern of thinking. We have cited to you in the past, and we do this now, that we must understand, and understanding the difference that exists between you and the races of the world that are not of the Adamic race or the white race, we must understand the structure of the substance of creation. We must recognize that all the material universe that God made, and he has been making it forever. All of it that he made, he said, was good, and the physical world is made, as we have been taught so many times, and as physicists are able to understand, out of the energy of the organized particles of electricity that make up each and every atom. And our physical bodies with molecular masses in organic, vital, living form are still a part of a physical existing creation. When the Most High intended to send his own household on the earth, he brought forth a physical manifestation, a physical issue, and he endowed it with the spirit of the life of life. And we point out to you that you as a race and as a household have the light of life because it was given unto you with the Father who begat you, being the children of God after the Spirit and the children of God through Adam after the flesh. The distinction that exists between you and all other peoples is the existence of being a creation that was placed in the earth or in the universe good in the day it was created until under the Luciferian fall evil was found in it. But you are the offspring of the Most High, begotten in celestial spheres and procreated in the earth. We turn thus to the book of John, and we read these words in the book of John concerning Christ, who was the light, the true light, that lighteth every man that cometh into the world. Let us make this distinction between those that had their existence from the days of creation or arrived in the Luciferian revolt described in the scriptures and in the texts of the ancient past, and those that came in out of the heavens and were the household of the Most High. He is the light that lighteth every man that cometh into the world. In the mysteries of the dimensions of existence, We understand today that the planes of spirit and all that relates to the dimensions of spirit are synthesized out of light. The spirit itself is made of light. We know more about light today than has been known by any previous generation that has existed in the earth. Our modern physicists have discovered that it possesses a capacity to be weighed, that it has weight, that it is a substance. And whereas we are able to analyze or define the electronic nature of the particles of the atom and separate it into elements in a physical creation, the flowing energies of the force of light are a synthesis of a spiritual plane. Therefore, the celestial being or the celestial body, as well as the dimensions of spirit, are synthesized in light, as all the physical universe in which this physical body is synthesized out of electronic power and force. The knowledgeable factors of the atom that holds it together with sheer force is also the emanation of light impact upon it. We today have learned that by light measure and by light absorption, we can determine also the capacities of substances in a physical world of the electronic or of the areas of electronic force. We are able today to define the vastness of creation, the antiquity of which continues throughout all time. For as God always existed, so also he was forming and making and creating. As we look throughout his universe, we can see the far distant lights of the great stars, the sidereal systems that are suspended around them. Or we pick up the light that comes reflected upon a planet moving through our solar system. And the physicist notes that as this light is reflected, it can come down through the instrument. It breaks it up like a prism. And we start to break up the facets of that light, and we analyze it even to its fine points. And we have discovered that the absorption and reflection qualities of each and every substance that we see in form in an electronic world absorbs a certain amount of light and reflects a certain amount of light, thus creating an area of differentiation. We call an analysis which can be expertly made of any substance by its ability to reflect light a spectrographic analysis. It is the right definition of the substances of which this area of our material creation is framed. Thus it is that from the far distant universe we have discovered the various elements that we have exactly at the same wavelength as we have them here. The same energy form exists. The same number of electrons or protons to make up each pattern of substance. The sheer mind and will of the Eternal, who is the light of life, who is the synthesis of his universe, and who has made it thus, has thus given us an ability to analyze, because he has given us the initiative and the vision, the technological ability to evaluate on the areas of this discerner of things and of substance. We discover, therefore, that we have a celestial body, a body formed in light. The frequency of that light is not visible to the normal eye because we are thinking and seeing with a video frequency through this physical dominion or realm. There are times when it is possible for us to perceive an emanation or a radiance or an aura, which is the impact of spiritual light. We point out to you that in this very time in which we live, there never has been, as it is at this point. We have one recorder here that's talking. So as it is at this time, we have never had a period where we have had more opportunity to know more about the things of our universe than now, because God is stirring his household to understanding, stirring them to research, and stirring them to knowledge. But the dimensions of spirit and the celestial substance has been given in knowledge to the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul, who was carried in the spirit to the celestial realms, taught of the archangels and taught of God, and sent to earth to write these facets of his knowledge in the records which we have of his apocalypse and of his writing. And of course, the Apostle Paul tells us that, there is one light of the body celestial and one light of the body terrestrial. The glory of the celestial is one, and the glory of the terrestrial is another. Just as one star differs from another star in its brilliancy, or there's one emanation that comes by reflection from the moon and a different wavelength of light that comes from the sun, so also is there a different wavelength of emanation in light from the differences of the areas, dimensions of being. The celestial place is in a spiritual realm of pure light of life. So it is the Apostle Paul that we referred to last week, who said, "I do not wish to die. I wish to be clothed upon with my celestial body, my house from the heavens. I wish the light of its power to envelop me that I might put on immortality." And this is his desire, not that he die or that he pass away, though it was not a matter of fear, because he says, I know that if this body be dissolved, I have a celestial tabernacle, not made with hands, begotten of the Spirit, eternal in celestial planes, but I wish to now be clothed upon with that light that is a part of the sustained force of the entire universe, of its entire physical creation, and especially of the organic structure of the human body, that mortal might put on immortality. He talks about this area of the celestial plane. We have sight to you that a celestial dimension is no less tangible than this one. Here in this physical world, with a body synthesized out of its elements, you touch the areas of furniture, you put your hand upon things, you shake one another's hand, and you feel and know the solidity of the energy forms that have thus been created. And though things are not made as they do appear, as the Apostle Paul has told us, we discover that our creation is made out of organized sheer units of energy whose solidity is totally dependent upon the law of the consciousness that emanates out of the mind of the eternal. Thus, by its procedure, we tell you that a celestial plane, if your soul consciousness resident in this body were to pass into a celestial plane, it would discover it no less real, nor would it discover as it reached out to touch the things illuminated round about that they were any less firm than this dimension is to the spirit, each in its own way. The soul consciousness resident in this body is a total capacity of recollection and perception of the existence and existence, and the soul is existentialism. It is existence itself. It is awareness of it. It is the sum total of the story of experience, of the things that is perceived, evaluated out of the abilities of receptivity, both by the senses, but superguided in the parties and the factors of your race by the Spirit. Therefore, you possess with you and carry with you these twofold factors. As far as the purposes of God and your race was concerned, you had no other design for the building of his kingdom but this, that his children transferred from heaven to earth would carry out the responsibilities of receiving the total patterns of his thought, translating it into action, would destroy the darkness and the superstition that curses the earth, would break the forces of evil. Some of them, having no capacity for spiritual illumination, wage war that must be met on the level at which they fight. Thus, spiritual values in the consciousness of the children of God cause them to battle the darkness, even though this war become temporal, and carries that battle for the illumination of superstition and darkness into the minds of the sons and daughters of God, activated by the areas of spirit. Thus it is we point out that the significant thing about you as the children of the Most High is that you are the children of the Father, who is the light and is the life of man. He is the light of the world. Now therefore, he said, he is the light that lighteth every man that cometh into the world. Thus, this divine household of the Most High God does not originate here, as some theologians have been taught. It is not the byproduct of birth alone, but has entered into the world. As we have cited to you in the past, you brought nothing in but your being in the celestial form, your consciousness as such, the spirit, and you take nothing else out of it but this, except that you organize the physical universe and harness it to transport forward and backward the things of your desire. I point out to you that in this vital hour in which we live, that we are closer to the great developments of time and history that have been to startle many but have been proclaimed inside the scripture itself. It is important, therefore, that we understand the tremendous majesty of light and glory, the celestial planes, the utter inability of celestial planes to be marred in their celestial areas by catastrophe or that which is error, but only as it relates to the areas of creation, or to the areas of the physical substances in which the light is not itself self-sustaining, can such a catastrophe exist. So we point out to you that you are children of spirit dwelling in the physical body, possessing a soul consciousness that does not live by bread alone. In fact, it would be totally impossible for you to feed your soul consciousness with food. You can feed your body. You may do well to nourish it with the good things, and it pleases your Father to feed you his children with all the good things of earth. Don't take that ascetic idea that God doesn't want you to eat good food, or he wants you to be miserable, or he wants you to get off in some monastery and eat parched peas. This isn't God's way of showing his blessing upon his people. God's not calling for the hypocrisy of this type of martyrdom. And he is not in opposition to his people enjoying the good things necessary to do right thy mouth as he declares to the lips of the Sabbath. But he calls to your attention that sense food and the substances that feed the body are not enough for the soul consciousness that must be fed on wisdom and knowledge and must be developed by the Spirit And therefore it must draw out of the spirit, and spiritual empowering as the synthesis of life reaches deep into the soul is one of the great and vital factors of living. When we talked to you about the entrance to the Holy of Holies and told you that the crucifixion of Christ, the veil over the Holy of Holies in the temple was rent from top to bottom, it meant that no longer did any high priest have to therefore appear before you in order that you could move into the restoration of celestial light and glory, or that your consciousness might dwell in the presence of the Most High. For in this instance he had consummated this, and he who had become man to dwell among men was the very Lord God of the universe, who now receives you as his sons and his daughters and charged you to come boldly before the throne of his grace and to move into the areas of his presence. But also in speaking to this, to you dwelling in this physical tabernacle, he referred to you therefore as his own household, and he said that he would abide with you even unto the end of this age. Now I point out to you that the areas of the divine nature, of the celestial pattern of the Most High, are radiant with an effulgent glory, and this glory we are interested in. For this glory is the emanation of light as it makes its contact in a physical world. The dimensions of light itself are all radiant, but as we deal with the glory of God in the earth, it is the result of the impact of light upon the substances of the electronic atomic creation. Thus, as we catch it through the spectrograph, or see it reflected, or find it, it is existent upon its contact with the physical body. Its phenomena is there. We never find the presence of God in any dimension without the majesty of his radiance, and the glory and the effulgence of the beauty that transcends anything that man might find in any other contact than this. It is true that there exists around the people of God's kingdom, especially as they have been associated with God, as they have meditated upon his word, as they've sought his knowledge, as they've sought his way, there is a glow that develops, a radiance about their countenance. It is far different than the people who have totally fed themselves on material things, until though they may be nice people, and they might give you a slap on the back, and they might welcome you heartily, and they might be unselfish with you, and they might pass the time of day, and they might give you laughter, and they might entertain you. But there is an existing difference between what they would discuss with you and the things they know than those souls that have been fed upon the light of life and have found the manna that moves out of the spiritual well. And thus, what do you discover? You find that you do not have as much in common, and they lack a glow upon their countenance that you find upon those that know the things of God as they meditate or discuss these things. This is only a small effulgent pattern of that majesty of glory and divine effulgence that was to be seen upon the face of Jesus, and especially as it was to envelop him as his disciples referred to their experience. Let us for a moment turn to the book of Luke, and here we read these words. As the disciples Peter, James, and John had gone with Jesus upon a mountain, and it came to pass that that Jesus was praying, and while he was praying, his countenance was altered. His raiment became white and glittering with this radiant effulgence. But his disciples didn't know it because they were asleep. And behold, two men were talking with Jesus upon the mountain, and it said in this 32nd verse of the ninth chapter of Luke that Peter and they that were with him were heavy with sleep, and they did awaken, and they beheld and saw his glory. This is a tremendous experience for these disciples, from sound asleep to awaken, and they behold his glory. The radiance, the emanation, the shining glory, the majesty, the glittering garments now of Christ, the embodiment of God, walking among them, and they saw the majesty and the beauty, and they saw the men that were with him, and they said, "We'll stay here. We don't want to leave this mountain." This impact with the spiritual glory and the emanation of the majesty of God is so great, we never want to leave it. We don't want to move out of it. But soon the two men disappeared, and they saw Jesus only. And then they were told, too, they must go down from the mountain to bear out the great work of his kingdom, which they had been instructed, and they had beheld the spiritual force from across its dimension enveloping Christ, as we have said in the past. The only thing he said I missed is that I might have the glory which I had when I was enveloped in this glory before the world was framed. We turn in our thinking concerning this majesty of God. In the psalmist, in the 90th psalm, in which we read again in the 16th verse, "Let thy work appear unto thy servant, and thy glory unto thy children. Let the beauty of Yahweh our God be upon us. Establish thou the work of our hands, upon us, yea, the work of our hands establisheth it. But let thy glory now appear upon thy children and unto thy children. Now establish thy children with the light and the glory, thou Yahweh, our God, our Father. Rather significant thing that when Isaiah was a young man, his ministry was set before him, and God was about to give unto him the charge essential to carry out his ministry. And he's burdened to go down to the temple. And the sixth chapter of the book of Isaiah tells us that Isaiah never forgot the exact time of this experience, for it was in the year that King Uzziah died. And I saw Yahweh seated upon his throne, high and lifted up, and the train of the light of the glory so effulgent that it was tenuous from that throne filled the temple. Tenuous light, that was the very energy flow of light that moves out throughout the universe, that holds it together. But in the great sustenance of the people of the Most High is a spiritual and enlivening food for the very celestial beings of God's children, always bountifully taken care of in the Spirit. For the Spirit knows what he has need of and prays in communion with the Father when you do not even know that he is thus doing this. And therefore, when it says the Spirit prays with vibrations, it's sadly translated groanings in the King James Version. Some people thought they had to groan to be spiritual, and that has nothing to do with it. For the Spirit prays with vibrations that could not be uttered. And I like the fact that they don't hear them, but they work. A lot of this this noisy spirituality isn't spirituality at all. It's just emotionalism that people are substituting, as Lucifer always will in men's minds, for real spiritual power and vision. Thus it is, I point out, that in this experience we see Isaiah entering the temple to find it charged and filled with light and glory until it moves past him almost like smoke from a fire, the radiance, the emanation, and the envelopment of it, and he suddenly became in the presence of such righteousness and such glory, hearing the words of the seraphims round the throne in the temple, saying, "Holy, holy, holy, the Lord God Almighty." And we read these words in the book of Isaiah. It says, "Behold, the whole earth is full of his glory." The light of it is its sustained power, divine effulgence that does something for you that it cannot do for those that don't have the wavelength of its receptivity. Even as Jesus said, even the Spirit of truth that the world cannot receive. And Isaiah said, as he beheld this suddenly, he felt a great complete inadequacy. "Oh," he said, "I'm a man of unclean lips. I'm imperfect. I'm not worthy to stand in the presence of this glory." And he fell before that glory. You hear the voice, they stand up, that led him to the altar, that took a coal from the fire, refulgent and radiant now with the glory of God, and touched his lips but didn't burn it. And in the course of this experience, he was to know, "Whom shall I send?" Then said he, Yahweh speaking unto him, he answering, "Here am I, send me." In the course of experience, this is not the only time that we find men in experiences like this. Joshua was to stand in the presence of the embodiment of God, the great commander of all his hosts, to suddenly see the emanation of the glory of God. Ezekiel, who was called as a prophet of God, stood on the plains of Shinar. And as he saw the great celestial fleets of God come circling in, great circling wheels within wheels as they came moving in, and they hummed and moved now with such velocity through our atmosphere that they roared like the falls of many waters. It makes me think of the ripping, crashing sound of our jets hurtling through the sky. And in this instance, the craft of the Most High came swooping in, and they roared with their speed as they circled. And the light and illumination came from them in radiance, and they settled down. And Ezekiel went forward, drawn with an irresistible urge to approach this miracle that he had witnessed. And he saw them open up a portion of one of these great vehicles of the sky. He saw them open it up, and they brought out over the ramp, and then they brought down a throne. And he said, "I saw when I beheld this, the appearance of this one that was upon the throne. I saw a fire of radiance and glory all around about. I looked at this beautiful radiance, this emanation, and I saw it radiating from me, even downwards, as the brightness round about. And I saw now, as this light went out everywhere, the appearance like the bow in the sky. The spectrographic radiation, the beauty of all the colors of the spectrum, was moving out everywhere. And then moving out from him was the light to synthesize everything with the symbol of green, like the green of the bow of the sky. And he described this, the symbol of the light of life, this symbol of chlorophyll and of photosynthesis and of the activated impact of stored light in life. But he refers to this light that moves to the presence of the Most High. And I said, I saw this brightness and this radiance. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of Yahweh. And when I saw it, I suddenly fell upon my face, my human inadequacy without this light, without this ability to stand in its presence. And I heard a voice say, come on, my son, you son of man, stand on your feet. And then he finds himself received by his Father for the instructions in his kingdom that he was to relay, that gives you the book of Ezekiel and all the great experiences that were Ezekiel's unto your time. He turned to Daniel as he reposed in the areas of Babylon and Chaldea, and under these circumstances describes his experience and how he suddenly beheld the appearance of one whose radiance and glory shimmered as he had never beheld glory before. And as he beheld this effulgent glory, the utter perfection, its radiant purity, its majesty of form, he suddenly became weakened in every portion of his body. He felt a complete inadequacy in the presence of such a light because he was not enveloped with it. And as he fell before it, he heard the voice of one that came over and touched him and said, set thy feet upon the ground. And behold, he said, I beheld this simultaneous like as unto one of the sons of men that touched my lips. I opened my mouth and spoke and said, O my Lord, by the vision my sorrows have turned upon me, and I have retained no strength. Then came the voice and said, O man, greatly beloved, fear not. Peace be unto you. Be strong, be strong. And let my Lord now speak, for thou hast strengthened me, I said. Knowest thou therefore that I have come to thee. I will show thee that which is noted in the scriptures of truth. And that that holdeth with me, behold, even is Michael thy prince. Thus the eternal God made known unto Daniel, who beheld him on all his majesty and glory, that he assigned one of the archangels to the protection of the kingdom, and that one of the great archangel princes of Israel is Michael, also radiant and a mighty warrior of the Most High God. But he beheld that majesty of such radiance and such glory that it reached deep into him and deep into his soul, and made him feel physically totally inadequate as compared to this radiant emanation of glory. We turn into the book of Isaiah because it contains also some statements in this matter. And in the book of Isaiah, having known that he had experienced these many things, we read these words of the Most High. I am Yahweh, that is my name. My glory I do not give to another. No other God can shed forth radiance or glory. No other being can possess it, except a people who I have procreated. Only my offspring can share in this glory. No one else, for I will not share this particular glory, this entity of being that is kinsmanship with me, with any but my household or my offspring. Therefore, in the 43rd chapter of Isaiah, we read, for I am Yahweh thy God, I am the Holy One of Israel, thy Yahshua, or Jesus. He says, since thou art precious in my sight, and thou art honorable, I love thee. I give men for thee and people for thy life. When I gather my seed from east to the west, every one that is called by my name, for I have procreated him. Yea, I have created him for my glory. I want you to understand this afternoon. Every last one of you as members of the household of God were transplanted from heaven to earth to bear the glory of a divine seed and of a divine household. No other race can do this. This is the difference between you and the beast system. This is the marked distinction between you and they. Therefore, he said, I have procreated you for my glory. I have formed Israel. Yea, from the womb I have formed it. Therefore, let all the nations be gathered together, let them be able to show the things that I declare unto you, or that you can declare, because I have shown it unto you. We turn again in the book of Isaiah, and we see these words in the 60th chapter, arise and shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of Yahweh is risen upon thee. Whose glory? The glory of the Father The glory of the eternal God is to rise from this celestial inner light that you possess, and it is to rise upon you until you become radiant with that glory. Let me point out to you that in the days of Christ's crucifixion, had he not unclothed himself from his glory when he had taken upon himself the body of flesh and dwelt among his kinsmen, they could never have crucified him. His sustaining power would have mended his body and maintained it in balance, molecular perfection. So we discover that it was after his resurrection that we see him now enveloped in his glory, and his disciples beheld him in his glory. And in the majesty of that glory, the very guards around the tomb fell as stricken men before the emanation of his majesty and of his power. I think concerning the words then again over here in the book of Luke. It's to be found also in Mark, and it's to be found in other passages, but here in the book of Luke it takes on even added significance. In this day in which we live, when there's signs of the sun, the moon, and the stars, when we've had the sign of the Son of Man in the heavens as we had in February 1962, when we have a period of tremendous change and upheaval, a period in which the very earth shall rock and shake, and the areas in which continents shall move and mountains shall move and rise and fall, a period in which we see history babbling, finishing its work to receive its great judgments, and God calling you to disassociate yourself from babbling. In a period of time when the armies of Antichrist gather to come against the great nations of God's kingdom, in which they will be descended upon the mountains of Israel. In a period such as Peter the Apostle says, what manner of people ought you to be, while you see the elements round about now beginning to dissolve in fervent heat, which is the beginning of the test taker concerning the battle between darkness and of light. Now, therefore, in such a time, Jesus said, in such a period with the great catastrophe sweeping the world, and men's hearts are failing them for fear, for looking at things that are coming upon the earth, for the very powers of the heavens shall be shaken. And then shall they see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with power and great glory. The majesty of this is that when the Eternal comes with power and great glory, the glory shall be activated in his children. It shall show forth upon his household. The cry, arise and shine, thy light is come, and the glory of God has risen upon thee, will become evident throughout the earth. We turn to the book of Revelation. Remember that here John, who in the very opening of the book of Revelation, in the first chapter, tells about hearing the words as he sat in contemplation, I am Alpha and Omega, I am the Lord God Almighty, I am the God that was, that is, and shall be, I'm the beginning and the ending, the eternal one. And he said, and when he heard these words, he describes what he saw. And he said, as I beheld him, and he looked upon him, he said, I saw the voice that I turned to see the voice that spake to me, and I saw this illumination. I saw this Son of Man clothed with a garment radiant from one end to the other, while he was also radiant. And he said, I am he that liveth. Behold, though I was dead, I am alive forevermore. And when he beholds these things, he said, I beheld his countenance, and it was shining like the sun at noonday. So in this experience of John, as he beheld the Most High God, the Lord, you say, stand upon your feet, I was your companion, you had nothing to fear. And he beheld the Almighty Eternal, and knew it was Yahshua Jesus, as he now beheld the Eternal God, and he saw him now clothed with a light that was brighter than the sun at noonday. Yet he could behold his countenance. And he had also fallen before the majesty and glory to find himself restored by that which was all glorious. We turn to the book of Revelation in the 21st chapter concerning the ultimate victory of the New World Order, the great city of God, which is made up out of his people, a living people. Remembering the words back in Genesis when God said to Abraham, they were going to multiply his seed, he was going to increase their number, they were going to build his order. And remember that while he was talking unto Abraham, Abraham believed God concerning what God said, even though he said, long since, though your life will be long, and you have been ready to your rest, and your spirit return to me, how will I multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven, as the sand of the seashore? And while he was contemplating this, and the righteousness of God was imputed to Abraham because he believed God, And behold, there passed before him the very presence of the Most High, its illumination so glorious that it was like a burning lamp as it went by. And he said, I beheld the burning lamp, symbolical also of its light illumination. I think that as we think of the majesty of God relayed to you, not dormant in you, and sustaining forth even now to come to its greatest area of revelation, that we think upon those days when the planet Venus, then a comet, swept into the solar system to bring its judgments upon Egypt, and upon the dark priesthood that waged its war against the kingdom of God and sought to keep you prisoners in Goshen. In that day as the catastrophes and judgments fell, it tells you also in the Bible that was neither light nor dark for 40 years. The sky was filled with debris and particles recorded by the Maya, recorded by the Egyptians, and recorded also by the ancient Chinese and others. Now, what do we discover? We discover that though the world was filled with ashes and debris from this astronomical phenomena, that in the camp of Israel, the issue of God, his own household, not Jews, wasn't a Jew among them, except a mixed multitude that brought trouble. And in this instance, it says that the light of God covered and illuminated Israel. That his light and his glory was with them. He was like a great pillar of illuminated fire, a radiant effulgent glory, like a cloud of effulgent majesty in the day. The great craft and the great operation of God's presence above them was shielded by the effulgent cloud of light that was there. I think out of the annals of the Assyrian Empire comes some of the most interesting of all the recorded archaeological records. For here we find that armies that were upon Sennacherib and forces of the Assyrians said, when we attack the encampment of Israel, let us be sure that we attack it in the daytime. For if we attack it at night, we stand out against the light of the presence of their God that shines down upon them, and every motion can be discerned against the background of the darkness. Therefore, the commands of the Assyrians are that when you attack the household of God, if you attack it in the daytime with the brightness of the sun, it's less apparent because you stand out silhouetted by the light of the glory of their God in the nighttime. So even our enemies bear testimony of the majesty of our God, of the glory of his presence, of the radiance of his power. Here in this 21st chapter of Revelation, it talks to you about a triumphant world order made out of the descendants of this Adamic race, whose culture and whose survival has been ordained of God for his purpose. And it says, in this hour I saw the presence that no temple essential, but the Lord God Almighty was there. And therefore, it said that we had no need of the light of the sun or moon to illuminate the new world order or the great capital cities of God. It said because the glory of God did lightness, and the glory is the illumination thereof. It says, and the glory of the Lord did lightness. The Lamb, the embodiment of God, is the light thereof. And all the children of God were clothed with his radiance, and they had put on their celestial garments, which the church is told to put on, lest they be found naked. Strange as it may seem, we are in a climactic hour in which these things are to be made manifest, and you again are to behold the glory of God. This glory is making itself manifested in the areas of cognition. It reaches into the charging of the soul. Here its encouragement lends to its strength in all the areas of problem and trouble and catastrophe. It illuminates also the areas of knowledge and vision. It is causing a probe to seek the things that you have been stirred to discover. The result is that knowledge, illumination, achievement, wisdom comes out of your race. You may point to Russia and say they duplicate these things, but they don't originate them. You may point out to your enemies everywhere, the great wisdom, the great knowledge moves out of you. They seek to capture it, but they don't use it with the motive with which it was developed in the essence of your thinking. I point out to you that you possess an area of illumination. And there is no secret thing that is to be withheld. But in the majesty of this hour, as the glory of God will increase upon the people of the Most High, it will immunize their mortal bodies. It will give them vitality and strength. That will charge them with spiritual power and the light of God, which he said, I will not give to another. I will now demonstrate, he says, upon my sons and upon my daughters. Yes, we think back again to that mountain, to the awakening of Peter, James, and John, as they said, we beheld his glory, the effulgence of illumination that eased deep into their consciousness that satisfies them completely as they beheld it, that charged them with power. And do not for a moment think that it is not an important thing that you preserve the only people that can carry forward this image, that the mongrelization of this race, the integration of this society, would make this life impossible, that God has willed that it shall shine forth, and that this victory of the enemy shall not be accomplished. We point out to you today that they can only give the image that they know. They only prepare the image that they understand. That's why you're not to bring teachers in from the areas of the world order that are not of your faith, of your race. They would destroy your culture with images that have no spiritual illumination and are incomplete and therefore filled with error. It may be unto them what they think is the way because they are moving in the areas of the darkness. But for the children of light to be taught by the children of darkness, or to be ruled by the children of darkness, is the greatest of all fallacies. For the preservation of this retention of all that you have experienced and known that God has declared is the preservation of your culture, which under God He has also ordained that you, as the children of light, might carry forth your responsibility because you are the light of the world. If this light were to go out, wherewith then would there be illumination? Even as He said, ye are the salt of the earth. And if this salt were mixed with earth, it would lose its savor. Wherewith then would be the savoring influence of the kingdom? All the problems of our society today is coming from turning our back upon the law of God, because we have not been activated sufficiently in the areas of instruction and leadership, from ministry to political leader, to fulfill this responsibility. And because, therefore, we have permitted that which is darkness to come in. Darkness covers the land. It is deep darkness to people. And the light can shine in the midst of darkness, and darkness comprehends it not. But the children of light must arise and must drive out the darkness, illuminating the whole corners of their land, to make sure that none teach our children, none handle our administration economically or politically, except they carry the light of life and are avowedly the servants of our Father. And so in this instance, again, we say, for His light is most glorious. O Yahweh, send again Thy light upon Thy children, because this being Thy will is also their desire, that we might again see our works preserved, and the things which we have established undestroyed and preserved by that light. So when we talk about the light of God, we're talking about the very effulgent substance of His celestial being, the emanating train of His power, existent whether you perceive it or not. But to those that perceive it, to become increasingly aware of it, it becomes the great strength and power that sustains and carries them through, leads the soul with its greatest expanse and envelops the being for the greatest day of all days. We have arrived on the threshold of the brightest tomorrow that the world has ever seen. The world order, my friends, is the world order of the Most High God. You go back to the basics, which we have to go back to in discovering the situation of these things. The scriptures tell us the eternal God throughout the aeons of ancient time had created and prepared all things. All things were made by Him and for Him. He was before all things. He made them for Himself. It tells us also that in the hours of creation that He created, from the elements geological on up to the areas of botany, and then after the plants, the animals, mankind. And He finished all 6 generations of periods of history in His creation of the earth and His recreation. And then He rested on the 7th day and said, behold, there is no atom I could kill with soil, with technological capacity, with greatness, with spiritual understanding. No atom I could kill with soil. So He didn't create this time. He begat Adam in His own image, in breathing into Him the breath of life. And Adam became a living soul, the offspring of the Most High. And this, my friends, was the transition of the Most High God, of transporting from heaven to earth a new order of the ages. Transporting from heaven to earth the seed from whence it would come. The race which would grow until its power and its victory had brought in the program of God's kingdom. A race predestinated by a God who in master sovereignty has never been wrong. A race predestinated to conform to the image of God in majesty and mighty power and glory and spiritual wisdom and understanding. Yes, this, strangely enough, my friends, was the inception of a new society. The Apostle Paul talks about the first Adam being a living soul,
and the embodiment of God who came in the process of redemption. The first, of course, redeemed his household and then threw them again the earth back to its proper position. And he refers to the embodiment of God in the human body as the second Adam, establishing the fact that Adam was the life issue of God. The creation were not, but Adam was. Our race, and God would establish. And God very well established another factor for his race. For his race needed the guidance of his spirit, for they were spirit of his spirit. They were spirit of his spirit, they were life of his life. They needed, therefore, the stimulation of spirit. And they needed also the constant pattern of renewing for the mind. So God not only gave his law to the patriarch by giving them his word, his promises, his discussions, for there were many promises, and much that God gave the patriarch. And from the patriarch of John down through the days of Noah to the days of the calling of Abram, he changed his name to Abraham. Instead of him would come a great nation and a company of nations. Down to the calling of the great leader Moses, who brought out of the house of Israel, who was to bestow the law that was to govern the program of the nations that would build his kingdom. He didn't give the law to anyone else but Israel, because they were his issue that ruled in the earth with him. More than this, as we see this, God established the gathering together of his household and people, who from the days of the patriarchs down had been assembling in catalytic power and spiritual communion to receive guidance from God. They called it in the Old Testament the Kehila, which was the church. The word Kehila meant congregation or assembly with spiritual powers, transitions taking place in the consciousness of man. And so the ordinances and the processes of worship, the processes also of understanding of wisdom and the guidance and the interpretation and the processing of the law and the giving of the voice of prophecy to his prophet that it might then be brought to his great Kehila is carried out in the areas of the Old Testament. The Kehila was the spiritual brotherhood of the sons and the daughters of God. The same thing is true when, in the days when Jesus said, upon this rock, the confession of faith and the identity that I am the embodiment of God, I will build my ecclesia, my church. For the word ecclesia in the New Testament is exactly the same as Kehila is in the Old, in the Hebrew. It again meant the continuity of this mystical brotherhood of the sons and daughters of God in which their spiritual capacities, their intellect, and the fullness of their being could be empowered with transition and with power and with greatness. You know, many people have strange ideas about the church. They have, right, many of them, been so involved in areas of theology, and they have so written up the patterns of theology that they've gotten far away from the Word of God. They think the church is here for just one purpose. That's to get people saved so they can get them into heaven. They think that's what the church was built here for, so God could get people into heaven with the church. I'll tell you, my friends, the church was the brotherhood of the sons and daughters of God that would be spiritually energized to perform and to do great things and to eventually bring in the kingdom of God by divine pattern. The church was to save men from error and from sin. Sin is error. Sin is violation of the law. Sin is transgression. Not when they die, when they live. The church has been a sin as while men live, not when they die. We know what happens to men when they die. The spirit returns to God who gave it. And if they happen to be Enoch people, and without spirit, the spirit doesn't know anything, it doesn't return anywhere. But they don't have that. Their soulishness leaves them blank. But the spirit of the living returned to God from whence it came. So I don't have to worry about whether he gets his sons and daughters back. In the book of Ephesians, he tells you you've already been blessed with all spiritual blessings in heavenly places in the bosom of the Father before the world was framed. The sovereignty and the majesty of God who created the heavens and earth is well established. He wrote your names in the lands of the life from before the foundation of the world. There is no question, no chance, no possibility for loss. Because thou is our Father which art in heaven, hallowed would be his name. Thus in the majesty of his purpose, he is promising a program of grace far greater than the world could understand. A program in which he promised them eventually a new order of the ages in which in total completion the sons and the daughters of God, spiritually minded, spiritually illuminated, would put his laws into practice and put in higher laws than men yet understand, as spiritual power and spiritual wisdom would flow through that. And he, as their eternal God, would join himself with them, and they would be his God, they would be their God, and they would be his people. This, my friends, is the program of the new order. But not, my friends, based on the pagan philosophies and the background, the concepts of these pagans. not a joining of their economic design with which the sons of Lucifer seek to gain control of the world and its economy. Not, my friends, by promising and then promising some more and never producing, but withholding the control of all the world. Friends, it may seem the program of God's kingdom is a complete kingdom, a complete program. We turn to the book of Matthew. He says, this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached throughout all the world, and then shall the end come throughout all the earth, and then shall the end come. But what does it mean? End of the world means end of the age of the world order. You know, they used to refer to worldliness as a very serious thing, because worldliness separated men from God. Of course, today, in the modern periods of theological semantics, you don't hear anything about worldliness anymore. Worldliness, my friends, was the sum total of those things which separated men from God. The prince of this world is Lucifer, and therefore the processes of worldliness were the processes of Lucifer's design and seduction. This is one of the reasons why again you're referred to as the strangers and pilgrims in the earth, of whom the world is not worthy. Strangely enough, God placed these strangers and pilgrims here not to see if he could get them back by some game of chess with the devil. He placed them down here because he promised that he was going to spiritually energize them and he was going to build with them a kingdom that would never be left to other peoples and never be destroyed. This, my friends, is a new order of the ages. That's why his spirit bears witness with our spirit that we are the children of the Most High God. And that we are not only heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, but he tells us in the book of Ephesians again, we have predestinated each and every one of you to conform to the majesty of his image and to help bring in a great area of new world order. When I listen to the President of the United States talking so foolishly, I think of the things that I see now approaching as we find the fulfillment of prophecy so clear. That the enemy is gathering his navy for a strike against America. Red Chinese and the Soviet Union are very closely building naval power on the east and west coast for a sudden strike against America. The ladies of the Vicon came out today. Do you see what they said in the newspaper today? They said today, as our military look over the situation, that for the next year, that the areas of the Vicon have carved their program for a military attainment and strike first power and have already secured all the material they need from Red China and Soviet Russia to carry it on. What are we talking about? Bringing everybody home, dismissing everybody, and moving in the direction of no weapons and no response. What a fantastic area of policy. If a man were to accept the policies of God's new world order, he sees new world order calls for spiritual truth. Call for recognition that you've got to defeat the powers of darkness, the forces of evil. You've got to also defeat the idol worshippers. You've got to defeat the evil which they're a part of. The program of God isn't one necessarily with peace. It wasn't one, my friends, that would move in essentially with peace because we're told of it. Jesus said he would have no sword better than sell his coat and buy a sword. He says, I'm calling on you, stand up and fight. They would tell you, however, the church is to know nothing except just preach the spiritual attributes of its faith in its background. To work on the tendencies of the men so we can clean them up and get them ready to go back to heaven. Well, let me point this out to you, now that the spiritual transition of wisdom and knowledge and understanding for the program of God's team holds the standard quite clear. It calls for their separation, it calls for their lack of integration and their lack of mongrelization, it calls for the preservation and maturity of the race. It calls for a race that will conform to the image of God and receive the great areas of transition and change as they're spiritually illuminated. I want you to know it tells you that you're going to have to defeat the program of evil, the powers of evil, and the program of Antichrist. There is no way of victory without defeating the hordes of Antichrist, without defeating and changing the world order, without bringing in the new order of the ages. That's what the gospel of the kingdom is about. That's what God talked about when he walked the earth. Strangely enough, out of the aeons of history, which exists over the millions and the millions of years, we see all the areas of predestination being literally fulfilled. We find from the beginning of the Adamic man that the words of prophecy concerning what would transpire with God's household and his family have literally been fulfilled. We don't find any broken patterns. We don't find anything that has not yet been accomplished. We're in the hands of a sovereign God. And that God is our Father, and we have the capacity to think his thoughts, to respond to his guidance, and to lead the world in the greatest era that he has ever entered into. So we're going to do it on God's timetable, on God's program. We're going to do it God's way. Yes, my friends, they tell us, as Mr. Nixon said, if we don't have to spend the money on war, we can supply everybody with everything all over the world. just like we're going to rebuild all the Hanoi and all of the North Vietnam. Why, he says, our medical scientists can overthrow all of the present situations with trouble man. You see, we know so much now about vitamins and so much about enzymes and so much about granular situations. We have so many foundations that have done so much research that we can cut the death curtain dramatically. We can extend the lifespan into years and years ahead. Oh, we can do all this if we don't have to spend the money on war. Well, my friends, I'm not too sure about that either, because there's just plenty of the enemy that have moved into the medical profession, and I don't think they want to find a way to prolong life as long as they can make money on repeat sick. I don't think they're after a program for lengthening human life, except possibly their own. But God says, I'll tell you what we're going to do. The first thing we're going to do is not going to be any more death. Not going to be any more death because of spiritual guidance and wisdom that I should place in the minds of my household. They shall understand how to conquer death. They shall understand how to release the powers of life and the power of glory. The Apostle Paul, you know, talked about this power of life and glory. We are the children of light. He talked about how light would so cover us and envelop every atom of your being, and that it would be impossible for the process of the disintegration to take place. He talked about the great new age. He wanted to put on the enveloping light and glory which he had before the world was framed, which again he would have. He talked about you who were the children of the new age, and talked about the fact that you, as the household of the new age, had a celestial body as well as a physical one. Yes, God said, there's got to be no more death. No more sickness, no more pain, for all these former things are passed away. There's no question, my friends, about the power of what's about to be made manifest. It's a spiritual power. It's an intrinsic power based on the patterns of the wisdom and creative sciences of the universe. And comes with the proper relationship with the proper God, the God of heaven and of earth, who has willed and ordained all of these things. New order of the ages. And therefore, as John saw a new Jerusalem, the new order of the ages descending out of God. I realized the new order of ages was the descendants of God, the Adamic household, the Adamic race, that conformed to his image. And in this I behold again the processes of righteousness. Rather strange condition. Returned this week on Friday to the Los Angeles Times. And there we see how the enemy is setting you up for a new more trouble. You've had trouble this week. You've had the teachers of the city on strike. Oh, you say, well, that's just a normal thing. Well, it took Larry Cooper and a Jew to do it, though, of course. He's organizing the school teachers. And the teachers were on strike. But the big process the communists have is tied in with the Negroes. The black militants. And so Friday they come out in Los Angeles Times. Andrew Davis, teacher of philosophy at UCLA. He says, I am a communist. And who the Board of Regents sent a question here. They asked her, is it true that you are a communist? Because, you know, our regents have had a bill long since passed. You have to remove communists from the payroll. You can't keep them on in the colleges in the state of California. The communist probably knows this is so the militant. Because she says, I'm not only a communist, I'm a black militant. And the black militants back her program, and the black militants are behind her, and the black militants that spoke up this week. Now they said, what are you going to do about it? She's a communist. She's going to teach communists and communist philosophy in UCLA. What are you going to do about it? If you fire, then we're going to bring the greatest catastrophe of revolution, fire, and trouble on your city you ever had. Read it in the Los Angeles Times. Well, you accept her and we spread communism throughout your society. We've got you. Because the Supreme Court says you can't fire a person because of their political beliefs anymore. They academically then can teach what they want and they can be communists. You can't do anything about it. You can't even control what they teach anymore in your own colleges, your own children, your own students. This, my friends, is the great world order. Strange as it may seem, they say now we're going to have to settle this, and the regents don't know what to do. They don't know whether they're going to have to back up or whether they're going to fire. And if they fire, they know they're going to have all kinds of trouble and wars and problems and burning the schools. And so this comes out all in the Los Angeles Times on their Friday edition. And this, my friends, is a program in which the black male can say, now, you're going to take us as this was, and our ideas as this was, and our ideas are going to surpass your ideas because we're right. Because the United States government's turning to socialism, you're going to have to take black socialism. It is a bad situation. And we see how far we have drifted from the guaranteed rights of our Constitution. When we see how this nation under God, governed as God had ordained this people would be, with its judges sitting by the basic patterns of law, moved into a great society, was thankful that God had prepared their survival. But while you come up to the last day, the climactic event, just before the end, and strangely enough, you find that your society has been invaded. Luciferian descendants have taken you over with their socialism and communism. They surrounded your president. They've been moved in and taken over the president of the United States, who I tell you is worse than Johnson, worse than Taylor, worse than Roosevelt, because he's now the apex of their power to create a strength and so on. And he did this with a deception over the right wing of not doing what he said, but doing the very opposite. And then wants to swing all the churches behind him, because this is the great program of the world order. It's going to have freedom from want and freedom from fear. That's not the new order. My friends, as you move into this, you'll find more want, more fear, more trouble, more war, and sudden surprise attacks. The areas of brutality, the areas of mongrelization, the areas of integration spread all over. Our marine force is filled with it. Great Beezer, a young recruit in his training in Camp Pendleton last week. He died yesterday. And he told before he died, they beat me to death. He died. Is this the country where we gather up men to defend their society? You know, when they join the Marine Corps, they enlist. Is this the way you treat them while Negroes can lick their hair out like the Hottentot Wizzy-Wizzies they were in the jungle, or raise their clenched fists like Moscow Salutes? What strange policies are sweeping America? There's anger moving through the country. And anger, my friends, is a great, tremendous reaction. Because God has promised that spiritual wisdom and knowledge of illumination shall take possession of the country. They shall rise as a great battle weapon in the hands of God, like a sword of wrath which shall bring its judgment. That the very spiritual illumination, the power and light and glory descend full upon the household race, they will stand for the kingdom of God. And when this thing is over, the people in power are going to be those that recognize the laws of God, the ways of God, the prophets of God, understanding the laws of God. They'll separate and segregate. They'll not integrate and mongrelize. They'll establish the economy of God on the basic patterns of economy and the policies of usury, and the areas of international type will be gone. The policies of supplying the need. For you are a society that can. But when you are properly operating, you discover that you can raise more food, you know what to do with. You discover how God has blessed the hands of Adam and how the world has yielded for him. But God also says, I can chastise these people and I can send upon them a drought. I can fold up their ability to raise. I can send upon them catastrophe. These are end of the age conditions until they wake up from their sleep. I received a letter this week that came out of the Midwest, one that came from Arkansas. This man has just traveled from Tennessee through Arkansas on up into Missouri through the mountains. He was making a survey. He said, Dr. Cliff, he says, we have a terrible situation. Not only have we the areas where the crops have failed because of the strange conditions of weather, but something's happened to the mountain areas. He says the berries didn't come out this year. We don't get the currants, we don't have the blackberries, we don't have the huckleberries we had. But he says there's very, very few squirrels. The wild turkeys, we don't find them this year. What's happened to them? The grouse are gone, the quail are gone. He says the game has disappeared from our forest. And he says, I have the Ozarks, and I've gone through all these mountains. I've gone up to the Blue Ridge Mountains. I've traveled, he says, along the hills and the wooded countries, both in Missouri and Illinois, and the game is gone. He says, surely a chastisement has come upon us for many of the people who say, what's happened to the game? We depend on the game through the winter for so much of our food. to depend on the belly, to depend on these natural things, the hickory nuts are gone. Where are they gone to? What's happened? And he said, I have told the men of your sermons talking about the possible chastisement, the conditions of drought that have been coming upon the country. He says, this is the thing that is now upon us, he said there. He says, surely now, he says, the people are turning their face and they're beginning to listen, they're beginning to wonder. If you permit the powers of darkness to run your nation, you're not bringing in the world order that you look for. You're bringing in the catastrophe of destruction that the Most High has also ordained by prophecy. But this is not going to be the end of America. Not going to be the end of the Christian nations of the world. He's promised them deliverance. He's promised them chastising judgment upon the conspiratorial design. He's promised them judgment upon leadership. He said, I'll take them out of the way. He's promised catastrophe to move upon these strange people that move in with these evil ideas. He said, I'll take the tares out of the way. I'll take away the advisors, the bands and the Christianers, and all of these people will disappear. There'll be no farmers telling you what to do with health, welfare, and education. For the kingdom of God will see its area of great deliverance. This nation is going to call on God for leadership and for guidance before you've gone very many weeks. We're on the edge of a peculiar type of depression. This peculiar type of depression comes from a lack of work as we shut down now all of the areas of continuity that move into the defense program. As we move in on all the smaller suppliers, they're cutting back. As we're turning people loose on construction contracts because we're going to force the contractors to hire as many Negroes as white. As we move in on the building trade, because we've got to move in on the building trade as well as the road departments to make sure they do these things. And the country is going out of work from one end of the country to the other. Thousands upon thousands are standing back. There's strikes coming up. More strikes coming up. But that doesn't mean things are getting cheaper. Prices are going up. All the car industry had to increase their prices on all their cars. They announced it this week. From $100 to $180, the prices went up on all the cars. And that's only the first, because they may have to go again inside of 3 months. The cost of food is going up. And as we see all these things going up, person said, well, now, what kind of situation is this? The prices are inflated. Work is getting less. The amount of money that's spent by the public will not be as great. And yet they're going to take more and more from the areas they get it. This is going to be a strange, peculiar tie-up. And this area of recession is going to be a serious circumstance. And what's going to come of it? My friends, before it advances to the danger point, the catastrophe is going to break. I want you to know that a people who have known the liberty and freedom of America are not about to permit themselves to move into another depression caused by the international money changers and those who designed to force you into the world government that Luciferian design calls the United Nations. They want to bring America to its knees to force its design, its control, its pattern to become the design program of the U.S. But I want you to know that we've got another plan coming. Fortunately, of course, the instability of the enemy, the sudden surprise attack, is designed to move. It's going to upset situations. And when we have watched the tremendous victory that shall be obtained, because it shall be victorious, America will tighten its belt. America will also move in. And we will start to build weapons like we've never built them before. But we're going to advise, my friends, that your great deliverance is still going to come from Michael and the archangels, the tremendous host of heaven. As God defends you as he defended you before, out of the strongholds of spirits and before the foundation of the world. And out of it will come a new world order. With no more death, no more pain, no more sorrow. For you, in conforming to the image of God, triumphant, the majesty of his household, in possession of the earth, will bring in that new order of the ages to the honor and the glory of your Father forever.